Happy Halloween. Bernie, you were supposed to bring the candy, right? So we have several new people. I'd like to welcome them all. And just say again that please don't worry about making mistakes. Just do your best, and if you do it often enough, you'll catch on how it's done, and you'll feel comfortable with it. So if you are familiar at all with Zen, you know that the fundamental truth of Zen practice is that despite appearances, there is absolutely no separation between ourselves and the rest of the universe. No separation. As soon as I say those words, for many people, the mind goes to work and starts to make sense out of, well, how's that possible? This is frequently referred to, all is one. So that's sort of that statement, all is one, can stump the mind. How can it be one? I mean, look at all these different people. What do you mean, all is one? It's not one. Dogen, who is a famous Zen master, for those of you who are new to the practice, and in his famous book called the Shobogenzo, he referred to this way. He said, to study the self is to forget the self, and to forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. So what Dogen is really saying is that the idea of self creates the separation. Because as soon as there is this self right here, there must be some non-self over there. Right? So there's me, the self here, and there's you over there. And as soon as we think that, there's a separation. If we forget the idea of self, we realize the fundamental oneness of the 10,000 things that Dogen is referring to, the fundamental oneness of the universe, right? So if we forget the self, that means we not only forget the self, but we forget all the ideas that we have that constructs the world around us. And in Zen practice, that's referred to as we empty ourselves. Mm-hmm. I sometimes imagine it as sort of this flood of everything leaving us. And there is no thought remaining that creates division. It's just emptiness. And even the word emptiness has to go. Now, this is a famous koan. And, you know, those of you who come here regularly know I love this koan. And those of you who are new, koans are, in most cases, a short story, which is designed to help the student go deeper in his practice. So this is case 20, which is from the Book of Equanimity. And the Book of Equanimity is a book of koans. I forget how many are in there. And, you know, there's sort of two different schools of Zen. One is called the koan school, and the other is called the shikantaza school. And in shikantaza, we just sit. There's no koan study. And in the lineage that we are in, it's sort of a mixture of both, depending upon the temperament of the student. So not everybody studies koans. So in case 20 of the Book of Equanimity, Master Jizo asks Hogen, where have you come from? And Hogen replies, I pilgrimage endlessly. Now, in the good old days of Zen, a lot of Zen students wandered from temple to temple, seeking the right teacher to help them get insight. So this wandering, you know, the idea of a wandering monk predominated in those days. We don't have that too much now. So again, Hogen replies to the question, where have you come from, by saying, I pilgrimage endlessly. And so Jizo asks him, so what is the matter of your pilgrimage? Why are you pilgrimaging? And Jizo asks, what is the matter of your pilgrimage? And Hogen replies, I don't know. I don't know. To which Jizo responds, not knowing is most intimate. Not knowing is most intimate. Right? And not knowing is when we empty ourselves of all preconception, all ideas. And not knowing is most intimate. Imagine your partner greeting you when you come home at night, or a family member, and they receive you from a place of not knowing. Right? They're not going to put anything on you. No labels, nothing like that. They're just there to bear witness, to be open to who you are in that moment, right? With no conception. They're empty of expectations. Now that is intimacy. And it's not knowing that maintains individual distinctions and thereby creates the illusion of separateness. When we surrender, however, to not knowing, all these distinctions drop away, and we realize ourselves as the 10,000 things, which is another way of saying the universe. And so we realize this oneness. Now again, if we really empty ourselves, all these words that I'm using have to be let go also. But it's not emptiness against duality. It's not words against no words, right? They're both useful. It's just that most of us are very practiced in the idea of thought and words and concepts and theories, right? But the reason why we practice Zen is we want to know, what is the other side? What is the side where all these concepts and ideas drop away, right? The place of not knowing. So that's why we practice, to find out what is not knowing. What is the experience of not knowing? And how is it to be received from a place of emptiness? Or how is it to give from a place of emptiness? So the fundamental truth we realize through Zen practice is that all things are one. And this truth, as you know, has profound implications. Now, I found this story. How many of you know who Ram Dass is? Okay, a lot of people. He was a big spiritual figure back in the 60s and 70s. Actually, a very sweet guy. I forget who his teacher was. He was an Indian teacher. And so, one day, his father asked him, what is this experience of oneness? Now, Ram Dass knew that if he gave a conventional answer, his father really wouldn't understand what he was talking about. So he said, didn't you do some legal work? He's saying this to his father, for your brother-in-law, Harry. And his father says, yeah, that's right. And so Ram Dass says to him, well, how much did you charge him? And he said, well, I didn't charge him anything. And Ram Dass said, why? And he said, well, he's my brother-in-law. So Ram Dass said to him, well, enlightenment is when everyone is your brother-in-law, or sister-in-law for that matter. So, oneness, the realization of oneness, not just the idea of oneness, the realization of oneness has the potential to revolutionize how we see and relate to each other and the world. So, if I am you and you are me, I am much less likely to exploit you, much more likely to respond to you with compassion. If a greater number of people in the world had this experience, there would be much less hostility, much more harmony, and much more peace. So it's not enough to know about this truth. In fact, it isn't even enough to realize it. Right? Think, well, the ball game's over, we've become enlightened. But no, we must embody that experience. We must take it into ourselves and make it completely who we are. Poetry and songwriter Art Durkee said, if you don't fall into a poem, into the world of the poem, if you don't feel it in your own body, that poem is not finished. So regarding the practice, I would add, if you don't take the realization, if you don't take this practice into your body, you are not finished. And I don't care how enlightened you are. If this enlightenment, this experience doesn't become embodied, then you are wasting it. So the great vows, which we said earlier, read, creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Dharmas are boundless, and I vow to perceive them. And then the last line is, the enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. So to fully embody this practice, we must take it into our bones, into our marrow. In doing so, we will carry it with us day and night. every moment of our lives. So in this way, the truth will become who we are. And the truth of the statement, I am you and you are me, will be an intrinsic part of our nature. We won't question it. It'll no longer be an idea, a philosophical discussion. We'll live our lives with the truth of that. It will be like having an itch. If we have an itch, we don't stop and think, oh, I must scratch this itch. No, we just, so there's no thinking, right? Because if I think, oh, I must scratch this itch, I'm already separate from it. But if I itch and I just go like that, it's instant. There's no separation. So like I said, if we take this experience of oneness into our marrow, we won't have to tell ourselves, myself, and this, that there is myself and this other person, and that we are one, of course. Myself and the environment are one, right? We don't have to make these statements in our head, right? Well, okay, here's Dave, and yeah, he's me. And Dave says to himself, yeah, I'm Carl, you know? That's a lot of BS, right? It's just the mind doing what the mind does. Now, the mind's not the enemy. You know, if we're driving a car from here to Boston, it's nice to be able to think about how to get there and to use a map and, you know that you're supposed to stop at stoplights. So again, emptiness is not opposed to fullness, to the 10,000 things. So, to conclude, if we embody the experience of this practice, we will respond from a place of oneness, a place of emptiness. There is no oneness without emptiness. Right? We have to empty ourselves to experience everything as one. Otherwise, the mind will keep dividing and dividing and dividing and perpetuating the same way of relating to the world. So these are two sides of the same thing, and I've used this analogy a million times, but one side is emptiness, and the other side is the side that's filled with thoughts and ideas and all sorts of, you know, flowers and everything, right? So there's emptiness, and then there's all the fullness of the universe. But it's one hand, right? Each part of the same thing, right? So it's not this opposition. But please don't create an opposition that I have to leave behind worldly things and become enlightened. No, that's why we embody it. And if everything is one, everything is one. Nothing is left out. So thanks for listening.